Well, we're back with the morning show on WGXC 90.7 FM. This is Creative Community Radio for Green in Columbia Counties. And I'm very pleased to welcome to the Hudson Station Dr. Ananda Krishnan Ramani. He's the Chief of Infectious Diseases and Microbiology in the Department of Medicine at Columbia Memorial Hospital here in Hudson. And so, hello, Dr. Ramani.
Hello, Noah.
Okay.
And thank you for having me on the air today.
Oh, thank you so much for coming. So I guess I thought I'd start out by saying, Lyme disease has been on people's radar and certainly in the news for well over a decade now and certainly been on the rise in our region. So I'm just curious, besides just explaining what Lyme disease is to the listener, have we learned anything new in the past 10, 20 years about how the disease is transmitted and how it behaves once it infects a human being? But maybe we'll start out just by giving a sort of answer to the question, what is Lyme disease?
Okay. No, those are very pertinent points. But talking about Lyme disease, first we need to understand what exactly Lyme disease is. Lyme disease is not some strange infection out of Mars or Jupiter. It's something, it's very common. It's not very new either. It's on the radar now, but we've known about Lyme disease for over 200 years, and it was first described in Europe. Only thing is they didn't know what it was. It was not until Dr. Willy Burdoffer described Lyme disease in Lyme, Connecticut, and that's how you got the name Lyme. It's from the town of Lyme, and it is caused by a bacterium. It's actually a spirochete. A spirochete, as the word says, you see, medicine is very simple. Once you know what it means, it's very simple. Spirochete is just, it's a spiral organism, so it's called a spirochete, and it actually belongs to the family of the disease causing bacterium called Treponema pallidum, which people don't know, but they know about syphilis. So this is the second cousin of the spirochete, which causes syphilis, but so it has some features which are similar. And so there is an initial infection of Lyme disease, which is the primary infection, which occurs at the site of the bite of the tick. So for Lyme disease to occur, it is transmitted by a tick in upstate New York and in Connecticut and neighboring eastern U.S. It is Ixodes capillaris. The tick which is seen in the West Coast is called Ixodes pacificus because it's on the Pacific Coast. So when the tick bites us, it releases these minute bacteria called spirochete, and it causes a local reaction which forms the bull's eye. And the bull's eye is, as the word describes, it looks like a bull's eye with this clearing in the center, and it becomes larger in size, and it occurs at the site of the bite of the tick. The bacteria then moves in from that skin structure into the blood, and from the blood it can go into the liver, into the spleen, and then it causes the secondary stage of Lyme disease. And it can also cause lesions on the skin where you see multiple spots on the skin. This is the time when this tick bone illness can cause inflammation of the heart, of the brain, of the nerves, and of the joints. So people may get joint swelling. But remember, every joint pain is not Lyme disease. There are hundreds of other causes of joint pains. So please don't jump to the conclusion that every joint pain is Lyme disease.
Well, this raises a question that I was going to ask you. I was wondering, is there at this point a reliable test? Because there are a lot of these symptoms, as you mentioned, fever, headache, fatigue, neck pain, some of the early symptoms that develop, I guess, 7 to 14 days after, those could be a cold or a flu. So when people come to the hospital and they're worried that they've caught Lyme, do we currently have a reliable test to figure out whether someone has actually been infected?
Very, very good question. No, it comes up all the time because people come into the office and they want a Lyme test. And I'm also a Lyme specialist, but I'm also an internal medicine doctor. So I do have my own patients who will call and they will demand a Lyme test. The best Lyme test is the eyes of the doctor and the ears of the doctor. So talk to your physician, and the history of being outdoors, having tick bite, or exposed to your pet dog or your cat, which may be having ticks, and getting a bite and having a bullseye rash is the first sign, along with, as you mentioned, Nova, very nicely, fever, chills, myalgias, body ache, headache, and also fatigue can be part of the initial and a little late features of Lyme disease. But remember, it's the diagnosis is mainly by clinical signs and symptoms. The lab test helps us make a diagnosis. Now, to help us with diagnosis of Lyme, we have FDA-approved tests called the ELISA and the Western Blot test. And these can be done to confirm a clinical diagnosis of Lyme disease. So, I had Lyme twice myself. And I noticed the bullseye rash on my left leg last year.
So you diagnosed yourself?
Yes, and I did go to my doctor, and I asked him what he thought, and he confirmed, yes, indeed, Lyme disease. But once the bullseye rash is seen, and as you very correctly mentioned, it occurs within the first 7 to 10 days, but it can happen anywhere from 2 days to 30 days. And therefore, at the time of the bullseye rash, the blood test for Lyme disease will be most likely negative. If someone comes in late, say 3-4 weeks later, the blood test may be positive. So do you really need a blood test? Most likely not, because if your doctor is confident that what he or she is seeing is a bullseye rash of Lyme disease, that time your serology blood test will be negative. You could, however, do a test then and a repeated test in 4 to 6 weeks, which will show a rising antibody showing that this was indeed Lyme disease. So in those cases where there is a doubt in the mind of the doctor, the paired sera, first done at the time of the initial visit and one done after 4 to 6 weeks, might help with the diagnosis.
Okay, well, we're talking to Dr. Amani, the chief of infectious diseases at Columbia Memorial Hospital. So you've been bitten and you find one of these bugs and they're engorged on you. What's your next step? What do you do next? And do you generally recommend, even if there are no symptoms of Lyme disease, that somebody immediately go on Cipro? Or maybe I should ask, is there a cure for Lyme disease, or what's the treatment that you recommend right away?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Noah. Yeah. So, I mean, you're a great host.
But I've already had a couple run-ins with ticks, so I've had a little bit of a experience.
I would appreciate you leave the antibiotics to the doctor.
Okay.
So Cipro, please remember, Cipro is a good drug for urinary tract infections, but it is not indicated. I repeat, Cipro is not to be used for Lyme disease.
Okay. Sorry.
So the tick borne illnesses are many, but the most common is Lyme disease. And the treatment of choice is doxycycline, amoxicillin, a cephalosporin called ciferoxime acetal, minocycline, and other forms of tetracycline and doxycycline that are available, as well as good old amoxicillin, which can be given and used effectively to cure. So I did get Lyme not once, but twice, and got cured. So you can take antibiotic as prescribed for the full course, just as I did, and get cured of Lyme disease.
Okay. So if you catch it in the early, is that the idea? If you catch it in the early stages, you can actually...
Yes. Like I said, Lyme has been around for 200 years. And before we knew that it was a bacteria which was causing this, people in Europe that had Lyme disease did not know what it was, that they didn't die of it. Most people, even if they are not treated, will get cured of Lyme by their own immunity. That does not mean that people should not seek medical attention. They should call their doctor, make an appointment, go and see them, because there's nothing like a physician visit, a one-to-one, see your doctor, ask her or him, and explain your symptoms and your signs. That's the way to make a diagnosis in modern medicine. We do not dispense medications over the telephone because because when you come in, you know, I spoke to Noah on the telephone, but there was nothing like meeting in person, talking to one another. That way you remember what all you did. So you go to your doctor and you say, "Doc, I've got this stop on my knee, and it's becoming bigger." And then the doctor asks, "What else you have?" And then you say, "Oh, I've got itching. What were you doing?" "Oh, I was picking up poison ivy." So then you know it's most likely poison ivy, not a tick-borne rash that you're seeing on your skin. But on the telephone, it may sound very different because you're panicky and you say, "Oh, I was outside. I got Lyme disease." So the doctor is thrown off because, remember, there are side effects to medications. Doxycycline can cause a rash itself. If you're out in the sun, if you're light-skinned and you take doxycycline, you're sitting outside in the sun, you may get what is called photosensitization or photodermatitis, which is a side effect of doxycycline.
Ah, okay. You know, I've noticed that doctor's advice is almost always go and see your doctor. And that's the first thing that you do when you think that you're sick. And then, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go to a song, and then we'll come back and we'll see if anybody out there wants to call. We're talking to Dr. Romani, the chief of infectious diseases at Columbia Memorial Hospital, and we're talking about Lyme, but we're also talking about other tick-borne infections and diseases, and I know that there are other ones. So if you have a question for Dr. Romani, you can call. The number in the studio is 518-828-0290. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM. And we're back. We're listening to a little bit of Gil Scott-Heron with New York is Killing Me. And we're talking this morning with Dr. Ananda Krishna Ramani, who is the chief of infectious diseases. Do I have that right? The chief of infectious diseases at Columbia Memorial Hospital here in Hudson. We were talking during the music break. I was asking you whether people sometimes bring in the bugs that they've found on themselves.
Yeah, that's true. They do. They bring it in to show as proof of having been bitten. And also they're worried if it is indeed a deer tick, or is it a wood tick, or is it some other kind of tick, because there are different kinds of ticks that are seen in New York.
And do they transmit different kinds of diseases? For example, we're talking about the deer tick is mm-hmm. the one, or the I think it's called the brown-legged deer tick. Is that right? That is the prime carrier of Lyme disease. But
yes,
they're
the deer tick is the prime carrier of Lyme disease. Yeah. But you can also have the dog tick, the hog tick, and the soft tick and back-legged tick.
That's one of my favorites.
So these are the different kinds of ticks you can see. But the deer tick, which is actually the scientific name is Ixodes capillaris. And the Ixodes capillaris can transmit not one, but three diseases, and three different diseases. One is a spirochete, which causes Lyme disease.
Uh-huh.
The other is a gram-negative bacteria, which is Ehrlichiosis.
Mm.
And the third is actually a parasite, which is Babesiosis. So one bite can give you three diseases.
And what are those diseases? What are the symptoms? What does Ehrlichiosis do to you? Are they similar? Do they have similar effects?
All of them will cause
body?
Fever. Yeah. All three will cause fever. But one, like I said, one could get all three. So you get three for the bite of one. Say one tick bite can give you all three diseases. You could get just Ehrlichiosis, so then there's no rash, because in Lyme disease, you have the typical bull's eye rash. And then the incubation period of Lyme disease can be anywhere from 2 days to 30 days. So you could get sick right away, you could get sick later. With Ehrlichiosis, since there is no rash that is seen, people may just come in with high fever, severe chills, headache, neck pain, and they think they've got meningitis, and they have Ehrlichiosis, which actually affects the liver and the spleen and the bone marrow, causing low platelet count. So people sometimes show up a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, and then they are very sick, because Ehrlichiosis can make someone very, very sick. This was actually, the name Ehrlichiosis comes out of the doctor who first described it. Dr. Ehrlich described it actually in dogs. So Ehrlichiosis affects dogs also, and it can cause a crippling disease in dogs.
And I did want to talk about that because I know people are also concerned about their pets. But in general, I'm curious. So if you find a tick on you, what is the likelihood? Do we have a sense of what the likelihood is, like among the population of ticks? What percentage of ticks are actually carrying the infectious bacteria of any of these diseases?
Thank you. No, that's a very good point. And actually, that's a point that's in the minds of people who live in Colombia and also in Greene counties, because we have a very high incidence. In fact, actually, our claim to fame, apart from having Noah on the golden microphone.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We have the highest incidence of Lyme disease in the entire world. So Colombia County,
in our region right now.
Yes, Colombia County, actually, per capita, per person, per 100,000 population, you can say, we have the highest incidence in the entire world. That means we do see more than anybody else does. So what does that mean? So Noah's question is right on the money. How many ticks are infected with the Lyme-causing bacterium? It depends on which part of Colombia or Greene County you harvest the tick from. It can vary anywhere from 2% to as high as 20%. So even then, 1 out of 5 tick bites can give somebody Lyme disease, or it could be more. So just because somebody's got a tick bite does not mean they're going to get Lyme disease. And that's why it's very important to call your doctor and see if you have any signs and symptoms of Lyme disease, Ehrlichia, or Babesia. The doctor can then make a determination. And the blood test, a specific test for Babesia, can be a smear, and the lab can look at the smear and look at the Babesia organism and Ehrlichia on the smear itself. So it does make sense to do a blood test. But a definitive test for both Ehrlichia and Babesia can be done by doing a PCR, a special test for these two organisms, which can be done when they are acutely ill. Afterwards, they can do serology, which can help confirm the diagnosis of Ehrlichiosis or Babesiosis. And treatment for Ehrlichia is again with doxycycline, just like in Lyme disease. But when Babesia, there are different medications which need to be used. And for that, you need to talk to your doctor.
I see. So I'm guessing then what you're saying is if you harvest a population of ticks, you're seeing incidence of these infectious bacteria in maybe 20 to 30% of the ticks. Is that the idea? But then also an infected tick doesn't always necessarily transmit the disease, right? Is that right?
Oh, that's a very good point. We don't know that. I said 2 to 20% of the ticks harvested will carry the bacterium.
Okay.
How many of those? So it also depends on a number of other factors. Did the tick bite? Did it stay long enough on you? So it takes about 24 to 48 hours minimum for the tick to be on somebody's skin to transmit Lyme disease. So if the tick was discovered, say, within 20 minutes, then it may not have had a chance to suck the blood enough for them to transmit Lyme disease. Remember that the spirochetes, the bacteria that causes Lyme disease, lives in the midgut and in the salivary glands of these ticks.
Oh, of the bug.
Yes, of the tick. So the tick has to take the blood in and then spit the blood back into the skin for somebody to get infected with Lyme disease. And so if you detect the tick early enough, and so hence we come to prevention, most important thing is if you send your kids out to play, when they come back in, make sure you do what's called a tick check. Check the child for ticks on their skin. And the ticks have a habit of hiding where the sun doesn't shine. So look in the armpits, behind the ears of your children. And like your mother said, when you were a kid, wash behind the ears. So look behind the ears, look behind the knee, look behind the arm, look under the, you know, in the armpit and in the groin to make sure the ticks didn't go and hide there in your kids.
Well, we're talking to Dr. Romani about ticks and Lyme disease and other tick-borne infections. Dr. Romani is the chief of infectious diseases at Columbia Memorial Hospital in Hudson. And here is my favorite tick fact of the day that I found out from going to the CDC website. And then I looked up Lyme disease. And then I looked up tick life cycle and hosts. And this is what it told me that I thought was amazing. Okay, so ticks find their hosts by detecting animals' breath and body odors, or by sensing body heat, moisture, and vibrations. Some species can even recognize a shadow. In addition, ticks pick a place to wait by identifying well-used paths. Then they wait for a host, resting on the tips of grasses and shrubs. It's spooky. And then ticks can't fly or jump, so the tick species wait in a position known as questing. And you were telling me during the break that the tick can wait, hang out there for days.
That's true.
Yeah.
Ticks, like you mentioned, Noah, you're a very, very astute observer. The tick life cycle is 2 years. So the ticks lay eggs. The eggs hatch and they become larvae. Larva then matures and becomes a nymph. The nymph then molts and becomes an adult tick. And then the adult tick goes into the next cycle to lay eggs. So this whole cycle, life cycle, can span 2 full years. So in the winter months, they go into hibernation. So they go into a resting stage where they can just stay for months without being active. And when the season warms up, just as it's now, actually, we are in the thick of tick disease, Lyme disease. And I've already seen several patients with tick bites and with Lyme disease already this season. In fact, actually, we have had such a long winter. Noah had one question off the air, how bad is it going to be this year? But so, when there is a long winter and then there is, so much vegetation on the ground, there could be rodents which come out, and mice and ticks could be abundant this spring and summer. So the most important thing is use the repellent to avoid tick bites. You come in from outside, do a tick check, shower so that you clean yourself, then do a tick check, because the tick may not be washed out in shower. And Noah brought out a very good point that the ticks are very patient bugs. They can do what's called questing. They don't fly. Remember, they do not fly. So they wait at the tip of a blade of a grass or a leaf to get a blood meal, because the tick needs a blood meal to molt to the next stage. So that's why they drink our blood, because they have to go from larva to a nymph. They need a blood feed to go to the next stage. From nymph to an adult needs a blood feed. If it doesn't get the blood feed, it'll die.
Little vampires. And the thing is we all blame the tick. The tick is kind of a nasty creature, but actually, the spirochete, or the bacteria, originates in the deer, doesn't it? Doesn't it come from, or the animal that the tick bit before it bit you? Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not wrong. You're right. Okay. I actually, the theory of spontaneous evolution was discredited more than almost 200 years by Louis Pasteur in France. So what he showed was bacteria do not come out of nowhere. You cannot get something out of nothing. So bacteria, spirochetes, have to be transmitted from one host to the other. So it comes from mice, which can get bit by the tick, and then the mice can be the primary primary host for the bacteria. The mice bite it. The ticks bite the mice and get the bacteria from there, and then it molts to the next stage. And then they can get into the deer, and from the deer's blood, it can go into the next tick, which gets a blood meal out of the deer. And then it can get infected with the spirochete, and then it molts to the next stage, and it can then transmit the disease.
That's how the Black Plague came to Europe. I think it was rats,
yes,
and bugs,
mm-hmm,
that were on rats.
That's
that
right.
Were on bugs, that were on rats. And anyway, I did want to thank you so much, Dr. Ramani, for coming in. I promised I would get you out of here by 7:45, and we're coming up on that now. But if folks have any other questions, or if they need information, or they find a tick on them, do you want to tell them who they should call, or what they should, where should they should go online?
Yeah, they could actually, they should first call their doctor so that they have, the doctor that they have, they know they have a relationship with, so that they can understand where they are. They can also call the Department of Health in Columbia and Greene counties for direction. and the Columbia County, the cooperative extension, the Cornell Cooperative Extension, does a huge service for our county by identifying the ticks. So one could approach the Cornell Cooperative Extension also for guidance. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Dr. Romani, for taking time to come in and talk to me and our listeners about Lyme and tick-borne diseases.